Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sane, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the American Tobacco Studios in downtown Durham, it's Tuesday, October 11th, 2016. Welcome to the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. On this edition, we're heading north to one of the most pivotal swing states in the country to get a sense of what's going on, if a U.S. Senate challenger still has a chance, and what voters seem to care about in the final weeks leading up to Election Day. Here to help us with some of those details is Chrissy Thompson, Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Chrissy, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Hillary Clinton was in Columbus yesterday. Early voting begins in your state tomorrow. What are you working on this week?
Yeah, I think all of us have been trying to process the last couple of days. I've just been working on a lot of stories related to the comments that Trump made about his behavior toward women over the weekend. And so we're still sort of trying to process what that means for our state. But as early voting does start tomorrow, you know, as many as a third historically of Ohio's votes come during that early voting period. So this is a huge time for campaigns to really start kind of building a lead or trying to catch up, so to speak. You know, if you don't do well in early voting, you can be trying to make up a ton of ground on Election Day, which is a pretty intense period. So,
right. As for the Trump misogyny locker room talk, call it however, categorize it however you would like to, what indicators have you seen coming out of that just a few days ago about how that's going to have an effect in Ohio, if any?
Yeah, so we have what's called a tracking poll that has come out since then. Tracking polls don't usually tell you the exact margin in the state, but they can kind of show you the trend lines. So Hillary Clinton gained out of those, kind of the fallout of those comments. They ask how they work is they ask the same group of people every couple of days how they feel now about the election. So those people felt like, you know, Hillary Clinton had more of a shot now. More of them were interested in her, more of the undecided voters among them. So I think what we had seen in polls before that was that the state was tied or Hillary Clinton was maybe up a point or two. And so I think that her campaign feels like they have, you know, approaching what could be a more comfortable margin out of those comments. And I think that's probably true. We have a lot of suburban Republicans who have been kind of iffy on Trump. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of thing, especially among those women, those soccer moms, that would push them the other direction.
You mentioned early voting, and you said as many as a third of voters go to the ballot early or cast ballots early. In North Carolina, it was just more than half in 2012.
Wow.
So I guess two-part question. Are you expecting that? Is there any indicator that that's going to trend upward at all this year? And who are you expecting to vote early? I mean, is it similar with what we see elsewhere in the country?
Yeah. So we've only had early voting without fault. Like, anyone can vote early without having to give a reason or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Since 2008, we had really, really long lines in 2004, and thousands of people left the polls without voting. So they made a lot of changes. And so I believe, I'm going off the top of my head here, but I believe in 2008 it was a quarter of the votes were cast early. It was a third in 2012. And so, yeah, I think that we might see that increase this year. I think it'll be really interesting to see. We had seen indications of super high voter turnout before these Trump tapes came out or the Trump tape with those comments came out on Friday. And it'll be interesting to see if some Republicans stay home and if turnout kind of adjusts a little bit. But percentage wise, I think that we will see that going up. Democrats do usually build up a lead in early voting, and Republicans kind of have always counted on their voters just going to the polls like they always do. And I think that's kind of what we see across the country. It's used a little bit more by folks who are in urban areas, mm-hmm. You know, more likely to have transportation issues or less flexible work schedules. And we do see a lot of, I don't know if you guys have Souls to the Polls, for instance, where we have African-American churches who kind of go on Sunday afternoon together after church. So we see all of that. And Republicans kind of realized that they're, first of all, their voters, some of the counties that have the highest early voting percentage are actually rural Republican counties. And so they kind of realize for the first time, like, oh, our people actually are using this, and we really need to try to turn them out during this time period. And especially now that Donald Trump has kind of brought some new people into the Republican Party, some new registrants. We register based on our primary votes here. So they are kind of saying, like, the GOP chair here told me, like, if I don't get those guys and women to vote by Election Day, I can't assume that they're going to show up. So this is like a real intense time for them to turn out some of their new voters as well.
Okay, interesting. I wanted to touch on a story that you wrote. I guess you wrote it on Sunday night, early Monday,
yeah.
And it ran yesterday, talking about some of these Republicans who are kind of throwing their palms to the air and figuring out if they're going to vote, whether it's a Trump vote, you know, a vote for Gary Johnson, a write-in, a Clinton, whatever it may be. It sounds like you, as the article reads, you spent some time with Matt Borges, who's the GOP mm-hmm. chairman in Ohio. There's a great line about what his dogs did during the debate. Tell me just tell me a little bit about him and just your Sunday night experience.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad I get to talk about this because it was just really, we really lucked out. So I asked Matt Borges, he's the chairman of the GOP here in Ohio, if I could watch the debate with him and his wife. His wife had made headlines the week before. I actually wrote a story about it as well, because Borges admitted that she would not let him put a Trump yard sign in their yard. She does not support Donald Trump. And he is, I mean, you know, everyone in Ohio was a Kasich person. Our governor ran for president unsuccessfully. And so, like, he's not a huge Trump fan, but he has helped them set up their campaign. So that's kind of the backdrop is he and his wife, first of all, doesn't like Donald Trump, never has. And he and many of the people who are leading the GOP in the state have always been kind of on the edge about Trump. And so this stuff over the weekend really just made them feel pretty uncomfortable. We had Rob Portman, one of our Republican senator, withdrew his endorsement. Our state auditor, who's running for attorney general, said that Donald Trump's comments, he was laughing about things that amounted to sexual assault. So pretty strong language. Okay, so I asked if I can watch this debate with them. They said yes, which was really nice. So we sit down on the couch, and, you know, right off the bat, Donald Trump starts, well, there was the defense of his comments was basically the first question he was asked, is to defend his comments. He's talking about how he says this is just locker room talk. No, I did not actually do these things I was describing. And then one of their dogs threw up, like kind of a lot. Like, it was pretty, I didn't know a dog could throw up like that, I'm not going to lie. So, and wow. His wife, you know, who is just, she's kind of got her head in her hands because she just is like, oh, she just does not like Donald Trump. But the dog throws up and she's like, Donald Trump is so bad that my dog just threw up. And, you know, I tweeted it. It's a pinned tweet on my handle. It's
as
C.
It
Thompson, ENQ, if you guys want to look it up, because it's just a great story. I mean, I mean, I'm a good writer. Oh, yes, of course. But really, the fact that the dog threw up and all of this stuff, I mean, like, how can you cannot make this up. It's just
no.
So good.
And that's material that's just rich in nutrients and all sorts of things.
Other things.
Was the dog, not to get too bogged down with the dog, was the dog acting odd before Trump appeared on stage, or was it really like this visceral canine reaction?
So the dog was around the corner. So the dog did not see Donald Trump. And actually, Borges and I, we were just joking around, but had like this kind of Twitter conversation yesterday because he was like, my dog threw up because of Hillary Clinton. And I was like, I checked the tape. It's when Donald Trump was speaking. You know, and he was like, I know my dog. He hates Hillary Clinton. So I don't think they say the dog has allergies and gets kind of mucousy. I don't know. I mean, so there you go, listeners, the dog.
That's the big question. How many Americans have allergies and how will they cast their votes next
That's
month?
That's right. I know. So, yes, this ends this episode. Right. No.
Okay.
I mean, but realistically speaking, though, I think it's really interesting, this conversation that was going on in the Borges household, though, because Matt Borges is expected to run for RNC chairman at the end of the year. And he even said to me that he feels like, and this is, I think this is pretty controversial, but he feels like the boomers have kind of elevated Donald Trump as like their last gasp before they move on in leadership. Like these, this is what we're seeing from that generation of voters, mm-hmm. and that Borges is 42, I think, 42 or 43, and he, you know, he's from a different generation, and he really does not want to see the party go the way of Donald Trump's policies. So it's really kind of setting up. He's not sure what he's going to do. He's not sure if he'll vote for him. He's not sure what he'll have the party do.
Right.
That'll be a decision they'll make over the next couple of days. But I think even just moving forward from there, at the end of this year, if Donald Trump is not elected, there'll be some sort of reset in the party. And it'll be really interesting to see if a different, more open, younger, inclusive vision wins out at the GOP, or if this is really where their base and their leaders across the country want to go.
Right. Pretty fascinating. And just for context, here in North Carolina, the head of the GOP, the state GOP, has backed Trump. I mean, there has not been this kind of divide or question about whether or not he will support Trump at the polls. So yeah, no, it's very interesting and clearly.
So what are you seeing then in response in your state to the comments from Friday? Is there really any change? Because in Ohio, there certainly is. Like, people are kind of like, oh, okay, well.
There hasn't been a huge change. And I wanted to ask you about the Portman race in a second. So this probably is a good segue into that. North Carolina also has an incumbent Republican U.S. senator who is seeking re-election, that being Richard Burr. He's been in the U.S. Senate for a couple of terms now. And he has tried to, he's done this tightrope with Donald Trump since April or May, supporting him, but, you know, trying to distance himself and not appearing with him readily at campaign events and whatnot. And he was asked, Burr was asked about this over the weekend and, you know, invoked his dad, who was a Baptist preacher, and said he was taught to forgive and, you know, he could forgive Trump. And it's really about Hillary Clinton. He just can't support Hillary Clinton. And you know, she's not going to improve the economy, the economic situation in the United States. And he was still behind Trump. But that is not what you, and we should say again, we're chatting with Chrissy Thompson, who writes for the Cincinnati Inquirer. She's the Columbus bureau chief. So that's what's happening, has happened at least with one Senate race in North Carolina. You all have similarly a somewhat of a high profile Senate race, a Republican incumbent the Democrats are trying to flip. Former Governor Ted Strickland is challenging Republican incumbent Rob Portman. But Portman, from what I've read from your writings and others, it sounds like he has distanced himself definitively from Trump in the last 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, and it was kind of a rocky process to get there. It's really interesting. So Rob Portman was up by 15 or more points.
Right,
on
it was over.
Strickland.
Right.
Yeah, totally over. Yeah, totally. And I still think it's going to be super hard for Ted Strickland to make up that gap. I mean, you're seeing. I saw some stories this morning about, you know, Clinton super PAC maybe kind of switching to Senate races in some places, and Ohio was not listed as one of those. So that's the context there. Ted Strickland has his campaign has it's lacked a little bit of energy. He's in his late 70s, so that's he is an energetic older person, right? But I think that there has just been a little bit of they don't have quite the organization and energy that the Republicans have. And there's been a ton of outside spending and a ton of fundraising on behalf of Rob Portman. And that has just kind of really blown the gap out. They've just done a much better job there of kind of getting their message out. OK, so that's the backdrop. And then what happens with Portman is he had taken this similar approach to Senator Burr, where he was supporting Trump, but like didn't agree with him on very much stuff, first of all, and second of all, didn't want to be with him at any events. He had never appeared with him. And on Friday, he issued one of the first statements of any congressperson right after the tape was published by the Washington Post. He said that the comments were offensive and wrong, and Donald Trump was right to apologize. So just one sentence.
Sure.
And okay, so, you know, we publish it, whatever. And then other comments started coming out, like John Kasich, for instance, our governor, he used the same first two words that the comments, he said the comments were indeed offensive and wrong, but they're indefensible. And really kind of people were kind of being like, whoa, this first apology that Donald Trump, you know, released in his statement that afternoon, it just basically said, I apologize if I offended anyone, which is really qualified and apology, and said it was just locker room banter. And a lot of Republican officials around the country really felt like that wasn't a sincere apology at all, you know? And as the hours went on and senators and congressmen around the country started pulling their endorsements, there was a lot of pressure on Portman. And indeed, we really expected he would change his mind at some point. And that kind of puts him in a really bad spot to come out and be like, oh, he was right to apologize, and then to change his mind. And so he finally did at 9:30 p.m. on Saturday. He was the last person that day, I believe, to issue a statement. And, of course, this was his second statement. And he said that he had hoped to support the nominee because that's what the voters of the country chose. But he felt he could no longer do that. And he would be writing in Mike Pence, which in Ohio, we have many states have this kind of a law that that write-in vote will not count because Pence is not registered as a write-in candidate. And the deadline for that has passed. So
truly a protest vote.
Truly, yes. Okay. He will not be casting any vote that counts in this race. So, but like he did, okay, he's from Cincinnati, Rob Portman is. He put that statement out at 9:30, which is exactly our final print deadline on Saturday.
It's almost like he knew.
It is, gosh. And, I mean, maybe not, but he either took so long to change his mind that happened, or they really kind of did it in a way that, you know, by the time older Republican readers who only get the print publication or don't check the website on Sunday when they're having fun, it'll be buried, you know, on like B7 with debate coverage and the Bengals football game,
sure.
You know,
sure.
On Monday. So it was really interesting. And the Strickland campaign already has an ad out, first of all, calling Portman a coward, and second of all, really trying to hit home for some of these blue collar voters who might support Donald Trump, but also might be inclined to vote Democratic in the Senate race. That Rob, you know, reminding them that Rob Portman actually pulled his endorsement from Trump, which Democrats are trying to use against Portman. So, super interesting.
Very, very interesting stuff. So Ohio, I stumbled across this. I was reminded of this. Ohio has voted with the national electorate every year since 1960, I believe. Last time that Ohio didn't go with the winner of the presidential race was in 60. Kennedy won, but Ohio went with Nixon. There have probably been books written on this. From your vantage point and for a North Carolina audience, why have they followed suit so consistently for 56 years?
Well, we are divided state, so that's, you have to be a swing state for that to be the case. So that's one thing. We just have a lot of, like, every segment of the country in some ways is in Ohio. We have three cities with metro areas of more than 2 million people. We also have a kind of an industrial southeast that has pockets that are rural and pockets that are you know, it's like one of these, the town factory, and
right.
And then the town around it, and then the next town factory. And so those folks, they are conservative socially, but like they're pro-union, that kind of thing. We have a lot of Christian conservatives up in our northwest, which is pretty rural. But those folks oppose right to work because they're close to Detroit. And we have some of the earliest Tea Party folks are from the rural areas or in suburban areas outside of Cincinnati. We have a huge African-American population in Cleveland. I mean, it's and in our other cities as well. So we just have all sorts of different factors. One reason that we wonder if Ohio will be as much of a bellwether in, you know, maybe 12 years or 16 years is because we have a very low percentage of our population that are Latino or Spanish speaking.
Interesting.
And if that does not, if it continues to grow at a lower rate than the rest of the country, that would make us not so much, you know, kind of like a mirror or a microcosm.
Sure.
So.
I'm just going to hop around here randomly because that's what I'm going to do, and that's, you know, what you do on a podcast. As a basketball fan, I will note that I don't really care for LeBron James. But from a political standpoint, and that's really my own soapbox, LeBron James did endorse Hillary Clinton last month, several weeks ago. And I'm wondering how influential that is, if at all. I mean, he's obviously riding pretty high right now in Ohio. Is that of importance or not really?
Well, okay. So one of the reasons that Barack Obama won Ohio and the election, you know, both times he ran, is that he was able to get just a really high turnout among African Americans. And Hillary Clinton, while she is the candidate that African Americans in Ohio support, they're not like super excited about her. So it helps in that, first of all. He's from Akron. He's obviously playing in Cleveland. Akron is a large metropolitan kind of area that's, I don't know if it's technically a suburb of Cleveland. It's pretty close, though. We've got a lot of kind of big size towns, small cities right up there.
Right. It's just
Yeah. And it's heavily African-American, and he's really involved in his home community. So she actually went to Akron right after he endorsed her, and that was like a big thing. He has not appeared with her, and he had to practice that day. He was going to go, but they couldn't change practice schedules around or something, or maybe they just weren't going to for LeBron James. I don't know. So I imagine he will at some point. He said that he like wants to campaign.
Okay.
So in Cleveland, that makes a difference, and I think it's just it gins up turnout is the biggest thing. In Columbus, folks are Cavs fans. You get down to Cincinnati, and they like don't even feel like they're in the same state as Cleveland. So
right.
I mean, it's not gonna have like a huge statewide impact, but it really could help with African American turnout.
Okay, understood. One other thing I wanted to get a sense of from you here in North Carolina, the biggest of the wedge issues has been House Bill 2, the bathroom bill. What wedge issues, if any, are rising to the level of importance in Ohio? What things, I mean, not candidates so much, but I mean, are there pieces of policy, are there environmental issues, or you've mentioned unions a couple of times, labor issues that are going to have, you know, a role in what happens in the next few weeks?
So when I talk to voters, I think this is interesting because the Inquirer is part of the USA Today network. So it's like 110 newspapers around the country that are all owned by the same company. And we're all working on a project where we talk to key voters in our states. And when I go to Donald Trump rallies and I ask them, folks there, what they're voting on issue-wise, they always bring up trade and keeping our jobs in the U.S. And for instance, even in Wisconsin, which is not that far away, my colleagues hear a lot about immigration, and that's not something that we hear a ton about in Ohio, but people are really concerned about the state is doing okay compared to, you know, early in the 2000s jobs wise, but our job makeup has changed a lot, and we have more lower paying service jobs than and we lost a lot of high paying manufacturing jobs. So these are all middle class jobs, but just, you know, you might have been taken home in the upper 50s and you're taking home in the mid to lower 50s now for your family income. And so that's a big concern here in Ohio. And the trade stuff is something that Hillary Clinton has really tried to hammer home when she's here. It's interesting because Republicans are very pro-trade in Ohio. And we do kind of see a class divide on that. John Kasich, our governor, he's appeared with Barack Obama to try to sell the TPP. So that is kind of a wedge issue here in the state.
A crazy moment or a funny takeaway from the campaign trail for you, if you've got, you know, grandchildren 50 years from now or great nieces or nephews or whatever, if you're telling a story about the 2016 election, in your time covering it, anything that comes to mind? And this might be a throwaway question, but.
Oh, that's a great question. I love it. Golly. You know, I think I'm going to remember, and I'm taking it back a little bit, but I covered John Kasich's presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm going to remember just really, he had his campaign run entirely on town halls. And I think I'm going to remember in some ways just hearing so many questions from the people of the U.S. And I know that it was kind of an interesting experience for John Kasich, who'd never really taken a lot of questions anywhere. So to actually hear from the electorate. And I contrast that with really what I see when I cover Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is bigger rallies, and especially at Donald Trump rallies. You know, I've never been in an environment where I've heard everyone yelling the same thing kind of spontaneously, you know, when they yell build a wall, or, you know, who's going to pay for it, Mexico, or, you know, or, you know, let's all turn around and boo the press, and, you know, lock her up and that kind of thing. It's it's really interesting to see the power of people gathered together. I also have to say, regardless of whether you think what you think about either of these candidates, it's fun to be at rallies where people are having fun. Like, just everyone's happy. It's fun.
I would agree with that.
So regardless of I have fun at both campaigns rallies, you know, and the other thing, it has been interesting for me this election to see folks. I feel like Donald Trump has opened up the dialogue where people are really saying what they actually think, which is what we've always as reporters been trying to do, right, is to get inside people's heads and their hearts. And it's just interesting. I'll never forget the first time, and I've had this happen many times, but the first time that someone told me, you're like embarrassed to ask the question because as far as being polite, you just don't think people are going to answer this. But you say something like, do you think that immigrants have taken, you know, our jobs, your jobs, the jobs of the people in this community, and be like, yeah, I do, which is just not something that I feel like people would have been open about a few years ago. So that was really an interesting moment for me. I think I'll remember that. I wonder what my kids and grandkids are going to think about that.
Yeah, very interesting. Anything else that is top of mind for you or that you want to touch on before we sign off here?
I'm really interested in watching. You would have said that North Carolina and Ohio were very similarly locked up. In like being such super close contests. And if what you're saying is true, and a lot of people who are leaning toward Donald Trump are in North Carolina are sticking with him, I'm just interested to see, I think we're going to see a difference in Ohio, and it'll be really interesting to see if these swing states end up kind of dividing out into separate camps, you know, where something like the controversies, all of them really, that have that Donald Trump has been wrapped up in impact everyone similarly, or whether there's some states who really feel so strongly against Hillary Clinton and so strongly in favor of his policies that they're willing to overlook that. It'll be interesting to see what our population does on that.
Chrissy Thompson writes for the Cincinnati Inquirer. She's the Columbus Bureau Chief. You can follow her on Twitter at CThompsonENQ. Chrissy, I enjoyed it. Thanks for chatting.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to the latest edition of the WUNC Politics Podcast. Remember that you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play, and help your public radio brethren out. Share this episode on Twitter or Facebook if you've got a moment. Feel free to ask us questions there as well. We'll talk to you soon.